debt. It keeps you tossing and turning at night. You can't get away from it. But the truth is, the system is designed to trap you in debt. Insanely high interest credit cards and loans make it nearly impossible to pay off your debt. There's a new way out of the debt trap, Pivotal Debt Solutions. Pivotal Debt Solutions isn't like the old school debt relief companies that string your debt out for years. They have aggressive strategies that can end your debt faster and easier than you thought possible. Pivotal Debt Solutions can cut or even eliminate interest. Find programs to write off your balances so you owe less. Stop those threatening phone calls, and without bankruptcy and without a loan. Bottom line, they find every solution possible to end your debt permanently. Before you do anything, contact Pivotal Debt Solutions first. Talk to them for free. Find out how fast they can help you get out of debt. Visit zapmydebt.com. That's zapmydebt.com. Zapmydebt.com.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice. Believers, Nate, what's going on? Greetings, my friend. Yeah. Hey, I'm seeing audio over there. Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. And a lot in the news today. Americans for Tax Fairness. Well, first of all, you've got Donald Trump getting ready to blow up the Iran deal. And, you know, we'll see how that goes. And Americans for Tax Fairness are pointing out, stock buybacks climbed to $387 billion yesterday. This is the way that big corporations and billionaires make sure that the tax breaks for corporations turn into extra billions, hundreds of millions, tens of millions, and mere millions in the pockets of stockholders and CEOs and senior executives. In the latest evidence, here it says, that the Trump GOP tax scam was never intended to help working Americans, stock buybacks climbed to $387 billion yesterday, 58 times more than the $6 billion that corporations have announced or Americans for Tax Fairness estimates will go to workers through one-time bonuses or pay increases. Apple's announcement yesterday of a $100 billion stock buyback program, 333 times more than the $300 million it's promised workers in one-time bonuses, is one of the worst betrayals of American workers yet. AmericansForTaxFairness.org is the website. You can get all the information over there. In the meantime, we've got some strange goings on here in the United States, and this is the Iran nuclear deal. There's a clear, in my opinion, linkage right now between some of the behavior that is coming out of this White House, and specifically that I think has to do with Roger Stone and Richard Nixon. And so, you know, I wanted to get back Lamar Waldron, my old writing partner, and his new book, The Hidden History of the JFK Assassination. He and I together wrote Ultimate Sacrifice and Legacy of Secrecy about the Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, John Kennedy, and Martin Luther King assassinations. And Lamar is like one of the world's leading experts on Watergate and, you know, what these guys were up to. Lamar, welcome back to the program.
Great to be with you, Tom.
Thanks for joining us. So political crimes, what are the parallels that you see between Trump's political espionage deal? Here we've got Colin Kahl and I'm forgetting the name of the other guy, but there's two people who worked in the Obama administration negotiating the Iran deal. And it turns out that last year, the Trump administration or Republicans hired an Israeli corporate espionage firm to track down, you know, what's going on with the with these two guys who worked for Obama, who negotiated the Iran deal in an attempt to destroy the Iran deal. This is not anything new, is it, Lamar?
Not really. Not if you follow American political history. And it actually even goes deeper with some new information that The Guardian had also reported yesterday. So let's look at the reason that the Trump White House was trying to dig out this information. They wanted to basically find some sort of dirt on these people so they could smear these two former officials, from the Obama administration, just so that it would, who knows what they were hoping to find. They were hoping to find, these people had somehow made money off the deal, or they had some, something in their personal backgrounds that could be embarrassing, that could be used to smear them in public, in the press, and then that would, in the minds of the the Trump administration, would make it easier for the Trump administration to then leave that Iran nuclear deal. So the issue here is smearing people for political gain, basically, and that was one of the many things that Trump shared with Richard Nixon, which let me on your show predict that Trump would very likely win. He was using Nixon's old technique of fear, ignorance, bigotry, and smears.
Fibs,
exactly. And that term was coined, by the way, by a Republican senator, female Republican senator, back in 1950 to describe the Nixon-McCarthy era. But, Trump picked up the same thing, ignorance, spread lies, bigotry. We don't have to go into too much detail there with Trump, and then smears. So that was what this was about. But it goes even farther. Now, Nixon, of course, had an in-house White House unit called the Plumbers. He actually had several political crimes units. That was one. The Plumbers were the ones that were caught at the Watergate and that we all know about. What Trump did was to hire an Israeli political intelligence firm to do this, the same firm that Harvey Weinstein hired to try to discredit his victims in the press. And so, the only difference here is, one was an in-house unit under Nixon, and yet Trump, is just kind of outsourcing it. But it goes deeper because The Guardian reported just yesterday that there was an American organization that was very much behind the Iran nuclear deal. I think it was like an arms control organization in Washington. Their offices were burglarized. Now, it was just like the Watergate burglars, only this is a U.S. Organization that supports the Iran nuclear. Their headquarters was burglarized in Washington in a very sophisticated burglary attempt. In other words, this was no ordinary break-in. This was highly sophisticated, and everybody respects, the Israeli military and Israeli intelligence, and no doubt, this firm probably has, veterans of some of both. And it was, they were able to destroy the surveillance system, the alarm system, temporarily disable, and go into this place to look for who knows what, again, probably dirt on this organization. And so The Guardian, like I said, they just reported that yesterday, so the parallel is even stronger, not just looking for dirt to smear these two former officials, but even a sophisticated break-in in Washington, D.C., just as we saw in Watergate, where Nixon burglarized not only the Democratic National Committee headquarters, but also the embassy of Chile in Washington, looking for the information they thought that could harm Nixon's chances for re-election. So using political crimes and political break-ins and foreign policy just for their own ends, because, of course, that's all Trump is doing here. This is, getting out of the Iran nuclear deal was just something that Trump found played well to his crowds during the campaign. There was no thought behind it. Several people reported Trump doesn't even know what's in the Iran nuclear deal. Right. It doesn't matter. He's just doing it for political gain. We can go back to Nixon to look at another time that he used foreign policy for political gain, which was to get elected president in the first place in 1968 when he ran with saying he had, implying strongly, he had a secret plan to end the Vietnam War. And then secretly, behind the back of President Johnson, who was trying to end that war before Johnson left office with a peace deal that would have taken effect before the election in 1968, that would have basically had a ceasefire in Vietnam leading to eventual peace. And Nixon went behind President Johnson's back, committed treason to basically tell South Vietnam, don't take that deal. Wait till I'm president. I'll get you a better deal. So thousands and thousands of U.S. soldiers and countless Vietnamese civilians died simply to make Richard Nixon president. So again, we have an example of someone using American foreign policy sheerly for political gain, which is again what Trump is doing with the Iran nuclear deal.
So one of the kind of peripheral to this or tangential to this, one of the things that we saw this morning is that Ollie North just got a promotion. Tell us about this and remind. Lamar, I'm going to take a break here and I want to come back on the other side because this is a really consequential conversation so we'll pick this up on the other side. We're talking with Lamar Waldron. He's a political commentator, JFK historian, the author of The Hidden History of the JFK Assassination. Excuse me. Also Ultimate Sacrifice and Legacy of Secrecies. He'll be right back. Stick around.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And Lamar, what's the website?
It is WatergateTheHiddenHistory.com.
Thank you. Okay, so Lamar, we had a TriCaster crash here in the very first part of the segment here, and so some of our viewers on TV and on YouTube did not hear what you had to say. You want to just recap real quickly what the point that you were making?
Well, basically the point is that using political crimes and politics in terms of foreign policy for political gain is nothing new. In other words, what Trump is doing and trying to look for dirt to smear these two former officials and apparently probably having the offices of this pro-Iran deal organization in Washington, D.C. burglarized, it's just very similar to what Richard Nixon was doing during Watergate with his political crimes units that were in-house. The only difference is that Trump actually just outsourced that to this Israeli intelligence private detective firm. And then even beyond that, it's just using the whole Iran deal in the first place. It's the same way that Nixon used the Vietnam War to cynically get elected by, as Nixon did, torpedoing this peace deal that President Johnson was trying to put together with
This was in '68. This is the one that Lyndon Johnson talked to Everett Dirksen and said, Everett, this is treason.
It's exactly right.
Right. So you were saying?
Well, and so, and you just brought up Oliver North. Who's now the, you can't make this stuff up, right, Tom? Mm-hmm. You and I have some gray in our beards and in our hair, but the same stuff just keeps on happening. So many young people today, they don't know who Oliver North was. And we go back to the days of the term people remember of Iran-Contra. So that was, it was a terrible time when you had horrible things going on in Central America, and you had the Reagan administration, and you're the person who told me a lot about, of course, how Reagan got elected in the first place. Mm. You were very early into the arms for hostages deals and all like that, and where basically the Bush-Reagan team running for president, they started out by cutting a deal with Iran to keep Jimmy Carter, whom they were running against, President Carter, to keep his deal from going through to release the hostages. Carter, would have loved to have gotten those hostages released. That was the major thing of his administration. He wanted to get that done. And yet, even in Iran, there were, and you didn't have a lot of Americans in Iran by 1980, because the hostages had been taken. The American embassy was closed. But on the front page of an Iranian newspaper, it said, the American Republican Party is going behind the back of President Carter and dealing with the revolutionary government in Iran to keep the hostages hostage. And so Reagan, Bush got elected. And then once they were elected, there was all the stuff going on down in Central America, and the Contras were in Nicaragua. They were the far right people, basically, the right wing dictator backing people.
Right. And we'll follow up on this right after this break. We're talking with Lamar Waldron, and he's with us for the hour. In fact, I think hopefully we can take some of your phone calls here as well. Stick around. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you on the hour, on the phone with us for the hour. Lamar Waldron, political commentator, JFK historian, the author of most recently his book, The Hidden History of the JFK Assassination. He also has a book about Watergate out and Richard Nixon. Lamar and I together worked on Ultimate Sacrifice and Legacy of Secrecy, two books about the Kennedy assassination and the assassination of Robert Kennedy and Martin Luther King. Lamar, we were talking about the parallels between this Trump administration being advised by Roger Stone and the Nixon administration being advised by Roger Stone. We haven't yet gotten to Paul Manafort's connection to the Reagan and Bush administrations and Donald Trump. But it's like, history repeats itself. We were just about to get into Ollie North. Tell us about Ollie North.
Well, so what happened was Congress did not want the United States supplying basically a bunch of right-wing death squads that were the Contras. They weren't like some little band of freedom fighters. They were, put together by big money from conservative interest in Central America and in the United States. So Congress passed a law that you can't send money to these right-wing death squads called the Contra. And instead, Reagan-Bush administration, they tried to get around that law. And they did all sorts of complicated deals with Israel and then selling arms to the Iranians, and then using that money to fund the Contras, and Oliver North was at the center of all that. And I should point out this huge parallel too, because the whole Iran-Contra deal was it's like the stepchild of Watergate, because there were a lot of Cuban exiles involved in the Iran-Contra operation, working for the United States, for the United States CIA, that, of course, Vice President Bush had formerly headed the CIA. And, of course, if you go all the way back to Watergate, you have, all the Watergate burglars were veterans of the CIA anti-Castro, the Castro assassination operation, some of them still on the CIA payroll. So you also have this CIA parallel back in Watergate, when, of course, E. Howard Hunt, who had been the chief of covert operations for all of Western Europe, that he was the ringleader of the plumbers during the Watergate operation, and one of his chief aides, going all the way back to the 60s, when you and I investigated all the Cuban exiles, their activities of the 60s, and they show up in Iran-Contra. So
are they still tied to the mob bosses, Marcello and Trafficante?
Well, in fact, some of them were, because then if you think back to the whole Iran-Contra era, the other thing that came out, that great reporter Gary Webb tried to expose so hard and did expose, only to have his newspaper, pull the rug out from under him and have major news organizations like the Washington Post attack him. Gary Webb pointed out that drug dealing was also used during Iran-Contra to generate income to supply the right-wing death squads called the Contras. And so and eventually the CIA, after Gary Webb, the poor guy was driven to his death, basically, hounded by the CIA and CIA-backed media people. Then the CIA Inspector General eventually said, Gary Webb was right. Yeah, there was a lot of drug dealing among the former CIA and current CIA people who were funding the Contras.
Can you put Ollie North in the middle of that?
Well, he was in the middle of it. He skated. So Oliver North testified to Congress under an oath of immunity. However, he was later convicted. But then his conviction was overturned, and I think there was a Reagan-appointed judge involved, and it was a little odd. So his conviction was overturned because they claim prosecutors actually used some of his immunized testimony when they prosecuted him. So here you've got a guy who was convicted. And then, you know, his conviction was overturned literally on a technicality by, I believe it was a Reagan-appointed judge.
Right. And now he's going to run the NRA.
Like I say, you can't make this stuff up. And then, you, of course, you have all the information now where it turns out that several people, you know, backed by Putin were providing funds and who knows what other kind of assistance to the NRA. The NRA, I don't think they ever put as much money into an election as they did as they put into Donald Trump's election.
Right.
You know, so you just have this constant pattern of corruption and illicit money going on. And to make Oliver North, you know, to ask the NRA, you just can't make this stuff up. I should point out something else really important, though, because we have the confirmation hearings coming up tomorrow.
Let's do that when we come back. You're here with us for the hour, right, Lamar?
Sure, as long as you want me here.
Okay, and you can take calls from listeners?
No problem at all.
Okay, so if you've got a question about the assassinations of John Kennedy, Martin Luther King, Robert Kennedy, or what's going on right now with the Trump administration, Ollie North, hang on.
To the Tom Hartman program, call 202-808-9925.
Give us a call at 202-808-9925, and we will put you on the air with Lamar Waldron. Stick around. Tom Hartman here with you. On the line with us is Lamar Waldron. Lamar, the author of The Hidden History of the JFK Assassination, among other books. And Lamar, excuse me, do you see any, we've got a bunch of people who have questions for you, too, on the phone here. Let me ask you one quick question, and then we'll pick up some phone calls. Do you see any parallels between Trump's political espionage in the Iran nuclear deal and the crimes of the Nixon administration? You mentioned earlier, you know, Nixon had his enemies list. But it was done in-house. This has been exported. Is this part of a larger trend on the part of Republicans to privatize government or what?
Well, I mean, it's simply a matter of, you know, again, I'm glad you mentioned the enemies list because, you know, Nixon had two enemies lists. You know, one had about 20 people on it, and the other one had like 500 people on it. He tried to get the IRS to go after these people. He tried to get the Federal Communications Committee. It was a great memo written by John Dean that said we're going to try to use the agencies of the federal government to screw our enemies. And it's no secret who Trump considers to be his enemies. And, you know, how much Trump is outsourcing. I mean, we know about these two officials and the smear against them. And like I say, there appears to be, you know, a break-in involved as well of an organization in Washington that supports the Iran nuclear deal. You know, what is Trump doing in-house that we may not even know about? Because, of course, Roger Stone, one of Trump's top advisors, even today, and of course, he's right in the middle of all the Russia stuff, he got his start as a very low-level operative for Richard Nixon's political, what they used to call dirty tricks operations. Some of them were criminal operations. Not that necessarily Stone was involved, but other people. And so Roger Stone is that thread that follows right from Richard Nixon to Donald Trump. And what don't we know right now? What has Mueller found out? You know, how many other smear operations, how many other break-ins have there been? And, you know, people like to say, well, Mueller hasn't turned up anything significant, and I think just the reverse. These guys don't investigate for a year with this bunch of really sharp federal, you know, prosecutors and investigators. I think they've turned up all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
And when you've got
They've already got, you know, what, over 20 indictments, over 30 indictments, I believe.
Well, and so if we're looking to keep score in Watergate, most people don't know this because of so much government secrecy and CIA secrecy surrounding, you know, Watergate, Iran-Contra, all these things. But there were 70 people that were indicted or convicted or who pled guilty in around the Watergate crimes. And so the question is Donald Trump going to exceed that or not? I noticed that article recently that said that Robert Mueller got 70 blank subpoenas, basically,
right.
For his Paul Manafort investigation alone.
Yeah.
That was on top of 35 he already got. So there's more than 100 subpoenas just on the Paul Manafort side alone. So I'm guessing once we know what Mueller has really found, we're going to find something that could well top the incredible criminal pyramid that Richard Nixon had, that again flared up again in Republican politics in Iran-Contra with Oliver North. And remember, the only reason that Vice President, later President Bush Sr., wasn't, you know, impeached, indicted, sent to prison, whatever, was he pardoned his former Secretary of Defense, Caspar Weinberger.
Right.
So they had gone up the chain of command, just as Nixon, you know, his underlings, a lot of them had to go to prison. He didn't. They had gone up the chain of command through people like Oliver North and these lower-level officials. They'd gotten to the Secretary of Defense, Caspar Weinberger, and then, you know, he was going to be flipped on to Vice President, now then President Bush, and Bush simply pardoned Caspar Weinberger so he didn't have to testify against Bush, and we're talking Bush Sr. here, and that then, of course, that brought us that Bush's son as our later president and all those horrible abuses in the wake of 9/11, the second Iraq War, and all of the you know, the CIA shenanigans that went on, and I call them shenanigans, they were horrible crimes, of all the you know, the tortures of people and the cooking of the books in terms of the intelligence to somehow justify the second Iraq War. And now we're getting ready to have a CIA director have confirmation hearings tomorrow who is in the middle of all of that.
Mm. Yeah. And speaking of what, I do want to get to our callers here, but your quick thoughts on Gina Haspel.
Well, the problem there is, you know, so not only was she involved, you know, with one of these torture sites, she was involved with destroying evidence, you know, the videotapes,
and, of the tortures,
and received no kind of reprimand or anything for that. But beyond that, think of how many CIA files are still secret to this day about Watergate involving people like E. Howard Hunt and Bernard Barker, whose associates, Harry Williams, you and I interviewed. And then that goes all the way back to the JFK assassination. The JFK Act from 1991-92 covers all of those key Watergate figures who were active in events around the JFK assassination, people like E. Howard Hunt and Bernard Barker, Watergate burglar and the mastermind of the Watergate burglaries, E. Howard Hunt. We still don't have a lot of those secret files about those people, even though the JFK Act says they should be released. So, you know, why confirm another CIA director who's only going to keep hiding these files from Watergate, from the JFK assassination? Some of them even involve Iran-Contra. Why have another CIA director sail through Congress on a confirmation when some senator doesn't just say, look, why can't you make all of that stuff public? Why do you have to keep all of that stuff secret?
Okay, last real quick question.
A long time ago.
We know now that Richard Nixon blew up the Lyndon Johnson's peace deal with the South Vietnamese in August, September, October of 1968, so that he could beat Hubert Humphrey in the 1968 election. And it worked. And LBJ was on to it. Everett Dirksen knew about it, but the American people didn't find out about it until both those men died.
And the treason again to elect Reagan and Bush in 1980.
Right.
By going behind the back of the Carter administration.
Right, by cutting a deal with the Iranians. So here you have two Republican presidents who committed treason to get elected. And then you had George W. Bush, who told his biographer, Nikki Herskowitz, in 99, that if he got elected in 2000, he was going to have a war with Iraq that would at least run through the election cycle of 2004, because his father's biggest mistake was having only a 100-day war rather than a war that was long enough that he could still be a war president when he went into re-election, and that George W. Bush would use that re-election momentum to privatize Social Security. And you recall his famous first speech after the 2005 election, or 2004 election, 2005 inauguration, I now have the political capital to privatize Social Security, and I'm going to spend it. So we have the last three Republican presidents, basically, every single one of them committing treason or something damn close to treason in order to get elected, in every single case leading to the death of American citizens and the destruction of American foreign policy. And the American people are still shrugging about this. The Republican Party is still ignoring it. None of this is, by and large, in dispute. And yet the news media doesn't go back to it all the time. I guarantee you, if three Democratic presidents had committed treason to hold the White House, it would be common knowledge in the mind of every single American. What makes you think, given how successfully the Republican Party and their syncopats in the media have covered up the crimes of Republican nominees, what makes you think that this Republican presidency and the crimes that he committed on his way to becoming president, whether it's crimes, you know, whether it's personal financial crimes, having his business empire, you know, financed by Eastern European and Russian oligarchs, or whether it's, you know, his ongoing refusal to participate, in U.S. intelligence operations and things, when it comes to the possibility that the elections were meddled with, or, I mean, you know, a dozen other things. What makes you think that anybody's going to be any more outraged about this Republican crime than they were about previous Republican treasons?
Well, it's simply sad because, I mean, the journalists like yourself, like Rachel Maddow, who do a great job bringing this information to the public. But when you look at, say, your ratings or Rachel Maddow's ratings compared to the ABC Evening News, for instance, which ABC always seems to, slant things the most pro-Trump of all of the news organizations, those primetime news broadcasts, they draw lots of eyeballs. And the average person today, they're still recovering from the Republican crash of 2006, as I like to call it, because that's when it started. George Bush Jr. said, I think he told the president of Argentina, war is great for the economy. Yeah, but it's really horrible for working people in America and those who died and those who are still suffering. So the average person today, the average millennial, they're struggling to survive. They've got to have, everybody has a side gig now if you're in your 20s or 30s because you can't make it on a regular job. So, people like you are trying to get the word out there. But, it's a tough road to hoe, and these guys are very sophisticated. Richard Nixon basically controlled most of the news media. It was only a handful of brave people like Daniel Schorr that you and I talked to, eventually Walter Cronkite, and just a very small number of others. Otherwise, the mainstream news media, people forget, Richard Nixon was overwhelmingly reelected by one of the largest landslides in history 5 months after the Watergate.
Right, in 72, yep.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Okay, now I'm going to step out of the way and let you have your calls, your questions for Lamar Waldron. Stick around. Hey, I've got to tell you about the world's best chair. Most of us spend over 2,000 hours a year sitting in our office chairs, and if you have back problems or trouble concentrating throughout the day, there's a simple reason. You're sitting in the wrong chair. Take your chair, your style, and your productivity to the next level with an X chair. The X Chair's unique anthropomorphic design and dynamic variable lumbar support cradle your body in a way you need to feel to believe. And a more comfortable posture means better concentration and much higher productivity. In fact, if you're a business owner, there's no better way to reward your top performers than giving them an X Chair. And the X Chair's sleek, modern style will upgrade the entire look of your office. Give yourself and your staff the gift that pays dividends 5 days a week, year-round. Feel and see the X Chair difference by going to xchairtom.com right now. That's the letter X, Chair, Tom, T-H-O-M.com, or call 1-844-4-X-CHAIR. If you're not truly thrilled by the look and feel after 30 days, return it for a full refund. Order today and save $100 and get free shipping. If you go to xchairtom.com right now and enter the code TOM, T-H-O-M, you get a free footrest. That's xchairtom.com or call 1-844-X-CHAIR. We have one here. We love it. xchairtom.com. And welcome back. Lamar Waldron, our guest, Randy in Ottawa, Iowa. Randy, you're on the air with Lamar.
I'm honored to speak with you, Mr. Waldron and Mr. Hartman. You guys are so eloquent in how you put things and so precise. And I don't have the knowledge base to go from, but there's something here that's a common thread, and that's dark money that was in that followed Ollie North. And from the time that in the early 80s, there was a business model of cocaine being shipped through Florida that made millions and millions of dollars, and that was recognized by the worshipers of money, the Republican Party. And that brought us to a place where there was a guy by the name of Barry Seals that was involved in this Iran-Contra, which was shipping cocaine into Mena, Arkansas, and when he was busted, was pardoned by Bill Clinton. And it went on to, that cocaine went on to be in L.A., and there was a reporter that finally got a hold of this story and tried to bring it to light, and they found him, he was a suicide with two bullets in the head. So that's where Oliver North comes from. And today what we find ourselves with is a president that all of his money is dark money. We've never seen his income tax returns, and that we have to premise what's going on today with him and the Iran deal with the Stuxnet.
So, Randy, we're down to a minute and a half. What's your question for Lamar?
I guess, shouldn't we be talking about what America did to the Stuxnet, about the Stuxnet virus, and what Netanyahu did by releasing it on the Iranians that led up to the deal we have?
Okay, Lamar.
Well, I think one big thing, and while I kind of want to drift away from your question, I do want to correct some information about Barry Seal, because there's a lot of misinformation out there on the Internet. So, yeah, Barry Seal was a pilot and the drug smuggler for the Medellin cartel, and you know, he testified and everything. He was actually killed in 1986 by contract killers hired by Pablo Escobar. And so, you know, there was the mention of Bill Clinton and all like that. You know, there's a whole kind of a phony narrative that a lot of CIA-backed and Bush-backed people put out about MENA, Arkansas, and cocaine smuggling, and Bill Clinton when he was governor, that tried to make it look as if the Arkansas governor, Bill Clinton, ran the United States, and he was responsible for all the drugs that the CIA was smuggling under the Reagan-Bush administration and then under the Bush administration. And so you always have to be careful. So I always try to correct people when they repeat some of that misinformation because, yeah, Bill Clinton was not running drug smuggling by the CIA in the 1980s. No, that was officials of the Reagan-Bush administration and then the Bush administration. So I just wanted to put that correction out there so that we don't spread any of that misinformation, because a lot of CIA-backed journalists have spread that misinformation to kind of take the onus off the CIA and the secrecy that they still have around a lot of records from the Iran-Contra era.
Okay. We'll be back with more of your questions for Lamar Waldron right after this. Talking to Lamar Waldron, the author of The Hidden History of the JFK Assassination, Ultimate Sacrifice, Legacy of Secrecy, and Others. And Tom, in Seymour, Illinois, you're on the air with Lamar Waldron.
Yeah, hello. Thanks for taking my call. My question was, has the American oligarch and mafia infiltrated our government?
Sure. Going all the way back to Richard Nixon, who was basically the mafia president. The mafia, in the form of Los Angeles mob boss Mickey Cohen, one of two mob bosses in L.A., contributed to Richard Nixon's first run for Congress in 1946. The mafia and Cohen again contributed to Senator Richard Nixon's election in 1950. They were again very strong for Richard Nixon when he was vice president in the 50s. Richard Nixon's main political fixer was a lawyer for mafia bookies, for more than 100 mafia bookies. So then by the time, and then Richard Nixon, when he was running against John F. Kennedy in 1960, got $1 million bribe from several of America's biggest godfathers, Carlos Marcello, Santo Trafficante, the Chicago Mafia, to try to help him defeat Senator Kennedy, who had made his reputation as a mob buster. That didn't work, and Nixon even had the CIA work with the mafia to try and kill Fidel Castro before that election. Many of those files, by the way, are among those still secret to this day in defiance of the 1991 JFK Act. And then, of course, Richard Nixon becomes president, and all these prosecutions against the mafia are compromised. A couple of the Watergate burglars were working for the mafia, the CIA veterans, at the time of the Watergate arrest. And then you get into the 80s, the Oliver North era under Iran-Contra with the Reagan-Bush administration, then the Bush administration. And again, you do have a lot of cocaine dealing going on that even the CIA Inspector General eventually confirmed. So, you know, today, you know, the traditional Italian mafia is very much on the decline. But, you know, when you look at huge American corporations, the oligarchs, like you say, I mean, the Russian government is practically an organized crime operation in itself, which is something that turned up in an email leaked from Hillary Clinton way back when she was Secretary of State, which is one reason Putin and the Russian government hated Hillary Clinton so much.
So the new mafia is basically the oligarch class. It's the international billionaire class. Is that what you're saying?
Well, yeah. I mean, so in other words, it's like, you know, when you look at all this money, a recent report, you know, Donald Trump, $400 million in cash and in business deals he was doing after 2006, when you had the crash going on, as the Washington Post reporter said, where was that $400 million coming from? So, you know, you've got that class in America, and it's international in scope. And so, So you've got all this foreign money, all this money laundering, the huge money here, the Koch brothers and others and Sheldon Adelson. So it's like, you know, and now with the tax giveaway, the Republican Congress passed, you know, for Trump, you know, the income disparity, it's not just income, it's the total wealth disparity is just so huge that, you know, average working Americans have little to no influence in Washington because you have to chase all this money. And so while I think there will be some sort of a blue wave this November, you know, we haven't even seen the game plan that the Republicans and these oligarchs have to keep power. They don't like to give up that power.
Right. And the oligarchs have already announced they're going to put $400 million into this election.
And one of your earlier callers did mention the dark money, and that is the heart of everything. You know, if you've got all this dark money, you've got Citizens United, and again, we go back to Richard Nixon. He was just, you know, it wasn't just that one Watergate break-in at the Democratic National Committee headquarters. It was Richard Nixon was getting millions and millions and millions from some of America's richest people, like Howard Hughes, America's largest corporations. A lot of those corporate people did get, you know, convicted or pled guilty or paid huge fines. But it was just this tidal wave of money that let Richard Nixon take that money and start all of his different political crimes units, of which the plumbers who were caught at the Watergate was only one. So we don't even know what Trump is doing. Of course, he doesn't have money. God knows if he even has a positive net worth. But his supporters, the people that want to see him there, that want to have even more tax giveaways for the wealthy, yeah, they're gonna just unleash and are unleashing already a tidal wave of money to try to keep at least one house of Congress. And then, like I say, it's you and I, Tom, we could not believe, I'm sure, when we were voting against Richard Nixon in 72 that he got reelected by such an overwhelming majority. But he did. You know, and so it's easy to sit here today and try to count the days until Trump is impeached or prosecuted or resigns suddenly for fictitious health reasons. But, you know, unless the Democrats get both houses of Congress, there's not going to be an impeachment. And you know, the Republicans.
Even if they do, I don't think there will be.
I'm sorry, what was that, Tom?
Even if they get both houses of Congress, there's not going to be, he's not going to be removed from office. That takes two-thirds of the Senate. That's simply not going to happen.
So we're, you know, so we could literally be facing four more years of President Trump.
Or six more years.
After the next election.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just, so all I can do is say we've got to do everything we can to have more transparency. That CIA director tomorrow needs to be grilled beyond grilled about why so many secret files about Watergate, about Iran-Contra, about the JFK assassination.
Because the one theme that runs through all these things is the association between the Republican Party and organized crime, right?
Well, and unfortunately, because I think there are a lot of good people, and the CIA as well,
right.
Often in that as well.
Right. Remarkable. Lamar Waldron, his newest book, The Hidden History of the JFK Assassination. Lamar, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much, Tom. I appreciate it.
Good talking with you. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Back to the second hour of our program. On the line with us, Grover Norquist, president of Americans for Tax Reform. ATR.org is the website. You can tweet him at Grover Norquist. And Grover, welcome back. It's been it seems like it's been a couple of years since you've been on the program.
It has been. Delighted to join you.
Thank you. And now that I'm no longer in D.C. and Ellen Ratner is no longer running dinner parties, we're going to have to figure out a different place to meet. I don't believe that I'm reading this. This publicist pitch from you says, according to the Cleveland Clinic, the normal respiration rate for an adult at rest is 12 to 20 breaths per minute. According to congressional Democrats, that's 12 to 20 times per minute that an adult human is exhaling a taxable pollutant, carbon dioxide. Did you really say that?
I don't think so, but
okay.
But if you're taxing carbon and the production of carbon dioxide, people breathing, they do that.
But that's not the production of carbon dioxide. That's the recycling of carbon dioxide. The production of carbon dioxide is when you take it from where it's been stable under the ground for hundreds of millions of years and put it into the carbon cycle, into the air, the water, in a plant matter and things like that, which is a whole completely different thing. Did you miss seventh grade science?
No, the question is the advocates of a carbon tax or a tax on carbon dioxide, whether that's a good idea or not. And of course, I tend to think that both the level of spending by federal, state, and local governments and the level of taxing is already too high, and adding an energy tax on top of that is what Al Gore and Clinton tried in 93. It was part of costing them the House and the Senate, and we're going to have a vote in Congress in the next couple of weeks where congressmen, Republican and Democrat, can stand up in front of the American people and either say, I'm opposed to a carbon tax, or I'm not opposed to a carbon tax. So we're just going to sort of separate where people are, and it'll be interesting to see. The Democratic platform endorses a carbon tax. The Republican platform says no to a carbon tax. So there's a difference there, and I think it's worth letting the American people know about and calculating how much a carbon tax would cost them in heating their house, cooling their house, driving their car, buying things at a store that were brought to the store by railroads or by trucks. It's a
great way to, you know, no need to filibuster this, Grover. I mean, you know, great way to try to define the argument while completely ignoring the elephant in the room. The fact of the matter is that since the mid-19th century, when we began taking carbon that had been sequestered in the ground for tens to hundreds of millions of years and inserting it into the atmosphere, what we are seeing is that the atmosphere is warming up. The consequence of that is that our storms are getting more violent. We just had hundreds of billions of dollars and tens of thousands, arguably hundreds of thousands of deaths as a direct response to the policies that you are an advocate for. You personally and the billionaires, the fossil fuel billionaires who support you and your friends are encouraging the death of the earth. And here you are saying that, yeah, there's people dying from climate change related stuff, particularly in Bangladesh and places like that. You've got northern Syria. You had, the desert came south 100 miles. So you had an extra, you know, million farmers now out of work showing up in the cities of Syria, leading to the civil war, arguably the entire Middle Eastern thing. You are completely failing to acknowledge that the poison that the people funding you want to continue to put into our air are not only killing us, not only increasing cancer rates, not only ruining the planet, but also are costing us
earlier?
A pile of money. And you don't want your billionaire owners to have to pay for the external expenses, the externalities, the costs of the poison that they're putting into the atmosphere. I think that is unconscionable, Grover. I don't understand how anybody holding those kind of positions can even sleep at night.
Okay, we're done with the filibuster?
Your turn.
Okay. Good. Thank you. Two things. When you tax a product that is not paid for by the company that makes it, that is paid for by the consumer, one of the tricks that statists who want larger government always put out is, oh, we're going to tax companies, or we're going to tax opioids, or we're going to tax something like energy. And then that's going to be paid for by an energy company. No, it's not. It's going to be paid for by consumers who
Are you telling me these energy companies can't dial back their dividends or cut back on the billions that they're handing off to their CEOs? You telling me that the Koch brothers just have to have another $10 or $20 billion next year?
Well, in economics, you may be familiar with the concept that capital is mobile, and capital goes to where people invest, where they get the best return.
Right. And so if a company needs to compete with another company, they can dial back on their executive compensation. And rather than their CEOs making, you know, $40 million this year, they can only make $10 million this year.
Right. And they, as opposed to raising prices, is your argument?
Yeah.
Okay.
As we see in every industry. I mean, this is business 101.
Okay. When you put taxes on particular products, at the end of the day, the only person who pays for that are consumers.
Because Grover,
the only
this is
way
not a tax. This is
money.
This is the recovery of an expense that is being dumped on us, like the fossil fuel industry, Coke Industries, ExxonMobil, these companies. They are crapping on us. They are dropping trowel, positioning their butts above the top of all of us, and crapping on us. They are fouling our planet. They are killing people. They're destroying lives, and you're defending them.
No, two things. My interest is in not raising the amount of money that is taken from the American people and handed over to the state.
Then stop these guys from polluting our air in ways that jack up the cost of our disasters and that cause more cancers.
I had a very interesting conversation with Al Gore. And
you are not responding to anything I'm saying here, Grover. Why do you keep changing the subject?
Because you want to talk about not the tax, you want to talk about something else. If
I want to talk about recovering from these fossil fuel billionaires,
you know,
the damage
on
that
the
they are doing
was
to us.
If concerned at all about carbon, you'd be out promoting nuclear power. The reason why we have more carbon
nuclear
is
power is not carbon
out
neutral.
Trashed nuclear power decades ago.
Nuclear power is not carbon neutral, Grover. You know that.
For helping, that would be useful.
Your nuclear power is not carbon neutral. It takes carbon to mine uranium. It takes carbon to transport uranium. It takes carbon to refine uranium. It takes carbon, massive amounts of carbon, to create concrete container shells. In fact, the average nuclear power plant doesn't produce its first ounce, or excuse me, its first kilowatt of carbon-free electricity for at least 16 years. Nuclear power is no solution. But on the other hand, wind and solar are both less expensive than fossil fuels if we stop subsidizing your friendly local billionaires.
Same thing is true about solar. What do you make solar energy out of? What are all the things you dig out of the ground in order
Absolutely
to put all
agree,
that
but the recovery cost on solar is a year or two. The recovery cost on nuclear power is 16 to 17 years. There's a world of difference, and you know that.
Well, two things. If you didn't have the kind of bureaucratic rules that were set down to cripple the nuclear power industry, the cost would be much less than the timetable.
Well, you're talking about, Price-Anderson, where we subsidize the nuclear power industry to the tune of hundreds of billions of taxpayer dollars?
And the
I'm all in favor of getting rid of that subsidy. That'll end the nuclear power
industry,
as you know.
Okay. The the question is, well, there's several questions here. One is, this is just the latest.
No, this is a really simple question, Grover, and you haven't answered it. Why do you want to force me to pay through my tax dollars to subsidize FEMA and through my tax dollars to subsidize health care in the United States? Why do you want me to pay for the disasters caused by the Koch brothers and ExxonMobil and for the cancers caused by the Koch brothers and ExxonMobil? I don't understand. Why do you want me to pay that?
I don't think, as a matter of fact, that I'm on record in favor of the state taking over those functions of government.
The state has already taken over those
functions.
Healthcare,
when the government runs insurance, it does a very bad job of it, and we're much better off not going and taking people's money.
Okay, so for the record, what you're saying is if somebody gets cancer as a result of breathing polluted air from the Koch brothers refinery or from ExxonMobil's refinery, they shouldn't have health insurance because you don't want the government to be involved in that business.
Because the FDA won't approve a particular medicine, which years later we discover after waiting long enough would have saved thousands.
You're still not answering my question.
No, I would argue that my question to you is the FDA has ended up, because of delays of new drugs, killing hundreds of thousands of people. Why do you tolerate that?
Nice try at changing the subject. Why don't you want the Koch brothers and ExxonMobil
to
have to pay for the externalities of their own product?
Yes, and when the government's product is to delay.
Why don't you want these fossil fuel billionaires to pay the cost that they're inflicting on me?
The government killing people.
Why don't you want these fossil fuel billionaires to have to compensate us for the damage that they are doing to our bodies and our environment? Why not? Is it just because they support the Republican Party? Is it that puerile?
What we're looking at here in the question of global cooling. I'm old enough to remember when this was global cooling, if you remember, caused by the same things that now cause global warming. Now it's climate change because they have trouble pushing the other two.
Why don't you want the fossil fuel billionaires to have to pay for the cost that they're inflicting on us?
Situation.
Why don't you want the fossil fuel billionaires to have to pay the costs that they're inflicting on us? Why do you want them to get away scot-free with creating disasters and creating cancers? Why?
Well, two things. I answered this question at the beginning, but you didn't understand, or you're trying not to. You don't get money from companies. Companies only get money from consumers.
Not true.
Whether you
and
have
you know that's
tax
not true, Grover.
Or whatever, the people buy something. They have that cash, which they can then use.
It's a nice line, Grover, but nobody's buying it anymore. I mean, maybe people bought that back during the Reagan era, but people have figured out that companies actually do pay income taxes. In fact, back in the 50s, one-third of our entire federal budget is paid for by corporate income taxes. Now it's only
11%. Corporate income taxes, but the incidence of the corporate income tax is about 90% on labor. There have been recent studies on this which actually make it very clear that the amount that actually hits capital is maybe 10%,
90%
on labor.
Great job again of deflecting, but why don't you want the fossil fuel billionaires to have to pay for the damage that they're doing to our bodies and our world?
Because
you don't think that they're going
to
pay it. You think they're going to pass it along to us.
Citizens.
Is that your answer?
You want to pretend money comes from somebody other than citizens.
So you don't think that money comes from corporations?
Companies make money when they sell a product. They get that money from consumers.
And when they make money poisoning people, shouldn't they be held accountable for it?
Look, that what they're often, when the company sells to, first of all, I would be very interested in a national debate where all of the science on that argues that for global warming or global cooling or global climate change, whichever one you're picking this
Grover,
year.
Hang on.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Grover Norquist, his website, ATR.org, and you can tweet him at Grover Norquist. Grover, thanks for dropping by today.
You got it.
We'll talk to you soon. Well, Benjamin Netanyahu, who told us that if we took out Saddam Hussein, that the Middle East would be a much better place, is now saying, hey, congratulations on destroying the nuclear deal with Iran. God save us. William in Lackachizaki, Arizona. Am I saying that right, William?
Is this, are you talking to me?
I am.
Okay. No, I'm in Sunrise Beach. I'm actually at my home base.
Oh, in Arizona?
I travel, I deliver the fifth wheels and trailers around the country. That's why
This is just where your phone is or where your phone is from.
Yep.
So anyhow, what's up? It says here you want to talk about climate change.
Yeah, you know, is there any way we can get one, like Germany did with all the solar panels on everybody's rooftop and allowed them to feed the grid?
Right.
Is there any congested county that can get some funding or something? Like I'm thinking like Orlando County or something, and just do it. Click on the on switch and show people that we can power, we can help power this whole nation.
The problem is that Rick Scott and his energy lobby buddies have passed legislation in Florida that makes it very, very expensive for you to put solar panels on your roof. You have to pay all these fees.
We have to get back to the legislation. We have to overtake the legislation again.
Right. But there's similar legislation being paid for by the fossil fuel industry and being pushed, I believe, through ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, the Koch brothers, state by state thing. Where state after state after state is making it harder and harder to do wind and solar, all obviously in service of the billions that the fossil fuel billionaires want to continue to make.
There's got to be a way we can do this because, to me, it's a no-brainer with the southeast, the south, and the southwest with the amount of sun. It's a no-brainer.
Well, even the north.
Electricity.
I mean, Germany had a couple of weeks
Germany
last.
Germany did it, and they're no sunshine state.
No, Germany is cloudier than any other state in the United States. It is the cloudiest part of Europe. And yet they had a couple of weeks last summer where they produced absolutely no electricity that wasn't from sun or solar.
Right, and they get hardly any publication, too, because of the control of the oil and the...
Well, the Europeans are familiar with it.
Yeah, I'm just banging my head, but the legislation problem is and the people, I think once they see it happen, they'll turn on to it very quickly.
Yeah.
They'll understand it. It's the way to go.
Texas is producing 20% of their power from wind. You've got Iowa is producing a little over 20% of their power from renewable sources. But again, nobody ever does stories about this. You've got the fossil fuel industry
Texas,
is advertising is big time on television.
Is Texas still their own grid? They're not connected to the rest of the states?
I don't know.
I heard that once, and I think that was true.
Yeah,
it wouldn't
surprise me if they administered their own grid.
Because I've heard that a lot of people are leaning, they're getting more socialized in the base movements, that maybe in a weird way, Texas might have one of those solar counties just to look at what we're doing.
It may well.
We can sell this for money. And Rick Perry's always open to selling things for money.
There you go. I mean, this is the sort of thing where if you could do proof of concept, which is what you're talking about, William, and in a way that was really obvious to everybody, I think that it would be politically very viable. I think it would draw a lot of Republicans in. Hey, you mean I can get electricity for half the price right now? And for that matter, you can get internet for half the price, you get water for half the price, you get septic for half the price. All you have to do is take the profit motive out of all of them. They should all be part of the commons. William, thank you for the call. Excellent point. Very well made. We'll be right back. And welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program, helping you win the water cooler wars. Brian in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Hey, Brian, what's up?
Hi, Tom. First of all, I want to apologize for my outburst yesterday when we were talking about the two-state solution. I was out of line.
Okay.
So I apologize for that. Calling today about education, you brought up and mentioned FDR, and there was no freedom without education.
Right.
Words to that effect, if I understood that. And from what I've been doing and some research and like that, I'm convinced that 95% of the American public doesn't know the truth about so many things. And that is why, the right wing is able to, basically control everything. So my question, is, what do we do or what do we have to do in order to educate in public education or offset the mainstream media about the truth? And I'll use Palestine again as another example. because they're not learning, kids are not learning it in school. What do we do to get the truth out there about everything?
Yeah, that's a good question, Brian. And I think that the number one thing that we need to do, in my opinion, is break up big media. But, you know, Howard Dean suggested that, and within hours they had produced the Dean Scream. The big media took him down completely.
That is the big obstacle. That's happened to so many people.
Yep.
That if somebody has the courage to stand up and say anything, they're smeared, they're marginalized, and
yep.
we go on to the next case.
Yep, yep, absolutely. Brian, thanks for the call. Well said. It's a big issue. It's one of the biggest issues of our time. Morris in Warren, Michigan. Hey, Morris, what's up?
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Thanks for listening to
SiriusXM. I've been listening to you for years. This first time calling. And I was just listening to other few stations, and I just heard them commenting on the Iran deal. And they're going by what the Prime Minister of Israel said. Mm. That's the facts that they're going off of, and I'm not real facts. It's just sad that they never use real facts. They always use alternative facts and never go by the truth. And I just wanted to say one more thing about all the judges that the president appointing. That's going to be bad for poor and black people.
Oh, yeah.
Because if they go on in all the district courts, it's going to be terrible for us.
Yep.
That's it.
Yeah, he's putting in nothing but wealthy white men, by and large, and virtually all of them out of the Federalist Society. You know, this the wealthy right white rich man's club. And, you know, yeah, I'm totally with you, Morris, and well said. And it's not going to turn out well for this country. And this after Mitch McConnell committed, in my opinion, treason by postponing the nomination of Merrick Garland for, you know, what, a whole year. I mean, it's just nuts. Fred, listening to KBCS in Bremerton, Washington. Hey, Fred, you got the last minute. What's up?
Well, I wanted to talk mainly about where E85 is going. We're talking about the environment. We're talking about global warming. We know the science is real. It's not made up. You know, Trump, he puts his hand in the fire. He's going to get burned. So that's real.
What's E85, Fred?
Climate change is real.
Huh? What is E85?
Ethanol, E85.
Oh, I see.
They produce a fuel that has 85% ethanol, 10%, 20% gas.
Right.
The auto industry doesn't want it because they figure they have to redesign their engines because the ethanol will destroy their tubes and their hoses.
Right.
Come on. That's a weak excuse. They don't want to do it because oil's in the back pocket of all this. And Trumpy's going to dance to their tune. It's a shame that we can't be more progressive when we know that when we stick the hand in the fire, we're going to get burned.
Yeah, although I think, Fred, we do need to acknowledge that the whole ethanol thing, that Monsanto and the corn industry, and I mean, you know, there's a bunch of actors in that performance that are less than ethical, too. But that doesn't mean that you throw everything out. Fred, thank you for the call. Well said. Excellent points all. So, fascinating day, a lot going on. Let's, you know, keep an eye on what's going on with Trump pulling out of Iran. I suspect we're going to see some unintended consequences of great consequence. But, you know, time will tell. And in the meantime, don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It requires you. Get out there, get active, tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.